Dance on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dance on the air. We're dance on the air.
Good morning and welcome to Dads on the Air, the 16th of December 2008. We thank you for joining us today and hope you'll enjoy the program we have for you this week. We also welcome all those listening to the live streaming via the internet from our studio here at 2GLF in Sydney, especially those in the US, Canada, England and Europe. My name's Peter Van der Voort, and in the studio with me we have that fine musician, author and professional rabble-rousing DJ, Ian Purdy.
Good morning, rock and pop.
I think he likes that title.
I do. I like that one. That was a good one. Thanks for that.
And a passionate defender of a father's right to his children and convener of Dads in Distress organisation, Philip York.
Thank you, Peter. Good morning.
Okay, on today's program, we're going to take another close look at an issue that we've been bombarded with over the airwaves and in the print media lately. Yes, you guessed it. It's the domestic violence against women. And now, of course, this year, they've thrown in the children in for good measure. No one is denying that domestic violence occurs, no one, but only to women and children, and perpetrated only by the males in the family. I mean, come on, what planet are we on? Women are all good and men are all bad? And no one in the media questions the accuracy of the historical data provided to support these allegations. Well, that was until our own Greg Andreessen pointed out the inaccuracy of some of the information provided by Dr. Flood and obtained retractions and corrections from the ABC and other media outlets. So we say, good on you, Greg. Well done.
Yeah, good work, Greg.
No one even bothers to put someone forward to provide an alternative to this one-sided debate. I think it's high time the community starts questioning some of this demonising, stereotyping propaganda against men and boys. Come on, mothers. It's high time to speak out. Or do you seriously believe you're only producing violent, abusive young male thugs? Do you really support the notion that all the males you are producing are violent bullies and all the females are innocent, helpless little flowers? Let's get real here, people.
Maybe they just imagine that's just the people down the road, that their kids are all cool, but the ones down the road are the bad, they're the bad boys, and there where all the girls are little saints and all the boys are little devils, you know.
Yeah, well, look, it's reminiscent of Hitler's persecution of the Jews. It's the same sort of hysterical rhetoric.
And sugar and spice and all things nice. Yeah. Slugs and snails and puppy dogs' tails. Remember that. It's been coded into us since the nursery.
Yeah, so today we'll hear an extensive interview with a Scottish journalist discussing some of the do's and don'ts of this perceived pandemic. We'll be speaking to John Forsyth, and he's a freelance journalist based in Scotland. He worked for the BBC in London for 10 years before returning to Scotland to become the political editor of Scotland on Sunday newspaper. He's going to talk to us about the Scottish government's gender-based, probably biased as well, analysis of domestic violence that ignores the fact that the number of male victims has risen by 12% per year for the past 8 years. Now, that's nearly 100% increase in domestic violence against men in a period of 8 years. We'll also cross to the Czech Republic for an interview with a father's rights activist there, Jiří Fiala. Mr. Fiala has been desperately trying to maintain contact with his two children, which the Czech courts will not support. After taking his case to the European Court of Human Rights, who incidentally ruled in his favour, the Czech Family Court still refuses to act upon the directions of the European Court of Human Rights and will not enforce his legal contact with his children. But first, let's see what news items we have today.
Yeah, thanks. We have a news item that's was released over the weekend in the Telegraph and also The Australian. It's all over the internet, and it's in regards to a senior fire brigade officer whose mentally ill wife has abducted their son overseas and taken advice from a woman who hired he is taking advice from a woman who hired mercenaries to rescue her own children. Ken Thompson is his name. He's the New South Wales Fire Brigade Deputy Commissioner, and he has not seen or heard from his wife, Melinda, or their four-year-old son, Andrew, in 8 months. The 46-year-old woman has a paranoia disorder, and she disappeared with her son on April 24. Mr. Thompson has successfully applied the Hague Convention in which an agreement between more than 170 countries for the safe return of abducted children. Interpol has issued alerts in 187 countries and has launched media campaigns in Australia and overseas. He has been successful in gaining an unprecedented order from the family court to publicly release the names of his wife and his son, which is really good to see the family court behind this case as well. And just further to that, there's another story in the papers in regards to a Melbourne father whose children is believed to have been abducted by their Swedish mother. George Pesser last spoke to his sons Frank and Andre, who are 11 and 9 on October 4, and despite overwhelming evidence, it's unfortunate, but it looks like they've fled the country. So it seems to be happening, obviously, in those two cases, and obviously a lot more that we don't hear of.
Yeah, no, that's shocking stuff. Tragic for everybody involved, horrible for the kids, horrible for the family, and the grandparents and the extended family who are also missing out on relationships with their flesh and blood, basically. Another article in this yesterday's Sydney Morning Herald, written by Stephanie Petling, under the heading "Dad's the Word on Discrimination." Stephanie writes, "Men have been prevented from taking on greater responsibilities at home by the Sex Discrimination Act, the legislation designed to break down gender inequality. The existing legislation assumes the person seeking flexible hours is a woman." So there you go. So back then when they were trying to get all this equality and stuff, they actually had a gender bias in favour of females that's only just surfaced now. I find this quite amusing. The committee heard evidence that men had found it difficult to get flexible working hours. Amending the Act would make it easier for men to take action against recalcitrant employers and help speed up the process of achieving equality between men and women. Equality between men and women, by the way, is something that I personally consider to be a symptom of intellectual poverty. Men and women are not, will not, and never ever could be equal. There's no such thing as equality in the real world. But anyway, I digress. Stephanie Petling goes on to write, "Greater powers for the Sex Discrimination Commissioner are also recommended. These include giving the office the power to investigate complaints and initiate legal proceedings." Yes, well, I don't know about that either. I mean, when you consider that the whole world is basically built on a gender bias towards female, and if you don't believe me, people, get hold of The Woman Racket by Steve Moxon and read it. It's all spelled out there in black and white.
It's not just all the feminists or all the females. It's the supremacist, isn't it?
Really? Well, of course it is. Of course it is. But, I mean, the whole idea, I mean, they're hiding behind this notion of equality. Mm. I mean, look, when we have a female captain of the Wallabies or of the Kangaroos, then we will have true gender equality. But until then, I'm sorry, it's a fiction and it's just making everybody look stupid, trying to pretend that this fiction has any relationship with reality whatsoever. Men and women are not equal and never will be.
And in a media release by Archbishop Barry Hickey in Perth Now, he reads, "The absence of fathers is the biggest family and social problem in our society." Delivering his pre-Christmas message on Friday, Archbishop Hickey said the absence of dads was a bigger problem than drugs. "The absence of fathers is the biggest family and social problem we face today. It is the biggest cause of lifelong difficulties for fathers, mothers, and most of all for children. This is borne out of worldwide by very large long-term studies of families. I know the Father Christmas isn't going to solve the problem for me, but I keep praying for it. Firstly, it is father and mother accepting lifelong responsibility for one another and their children, and then it is sharing of family life within and across generations," he said.
"This is the way you left me, I'm not pretending. No hope, no love, no glory, no happy ending. This is the way that we love, like it's forever. Then live the rest of our life, but not together.
In the morning, stumble on my life. Can't get no love without sacrifice. If anything should happen, I guess I wish you well. A little bit of heaven, but a little bit of hell. This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope of love or glory, happy endings gone forevermore. I feel as if I'm where you stand, and I'm where you stand every day.
This is the way you left me. I'm not pretending. No hope, no love, no glory, no happy ending. This is the way that we love. It's forever, and there's the rest of our life. We're not together.
2 o'clock in the morning, something's on my mind. Can't get no rest, keep walking around. If I pretend that nothing ever went wrong, I can get to my sleep, I can think that we just carried on. This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope of love or glory, happy ending's gone forevermore. I feel as if I'm waiting.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line from Scotland, I have Mr. John Forsyth. Now, John is an independent freelance journalist. He has worked for the BBC in London in the past and also been the political editor of Scotland on Sunday newspaper. He's also worked in radio in production in Scotland and is currently working independently. Welcome to Dad's on the Air, John.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, I believe that the Scottish government has recently published the latest 2007-2008 statistics around domestic violence and abuse. Could you maybe just run through what the salient features or the highlights of that particular report for us?
I suppose it's fair to say that I was kind of waiting for this latest round of statistics because I'd been taking an interest in this subject for a year or two, not least because I noticed that the Scottish government is signed up to what they call their Violence Against Women campaign, and it has been spending an extraordinarily high amount of money over recent years in supporting organisations that give both direct assistance to women who are on the receiving end of domestic violence and also a considerable amount of outreach work, so they're in control of the information that goes into schools, that goes into professional development in the professions such as nursing, teaching, social services, and so on. And I was aware that a huge amount of spending was going on the basis of what's called this gender-based analysis. But I was also aware that the increase in the amount of police reporting of males who are on the receiving end of domestic violence was increasing year on year, but was not being acknowledged, not being particularly seriously reported, and certainly wasn't being funded at all.
So in this publication, is the slant of the publication, you know, all about the usual story of male perpetrators and female victims, and you have to sort of dig in amongst the statistics to find these rises?
Well, that has been the case up to now. Every year up until last year, the date when this particular set of statistics is published has always been accompanied by a Scottish Government press release saying that domestic violence is Scotland's disgrace, it's entirely unacceptable, and giving the background research saying that the incidence of domestic abuse suffered by women at the hands of men, and that one in five will experience it at some time in their lives. I think because I'd been doing a bit of work and digging, they were much more restrained, but still weasel-like in the press release that they issued this year. And so the press release that came out, along with the statistics this year, said that there was a 2% increase in domestic abuse over the previous year. And it says in the press release I've got in front of me, and this continues the steady increase in incidents reported since 1999, the first year for which data is available.
Okay, and before you go on, these are police reports. These aren't telephone surveys of broad populations. These are just the reports that make it to the police.
No, this isn't what's called the crime survey research. This is police reports.
Okay.
And so journalists who are expecting the same old story would read, oh, a 2% increase, that's terrible. But when you actually looked at the figures, what it showed was that the number of incidents in which women were on the receiving end of violence by male perpetrators had fallen on the previous year. It is the first fall, I admit, since the statistics were being collected. And so the 2% apparent increase was actually made up of a 12.5% increase in the amount of males on the receiving end of violence by female perpetrators.
And this wasn't mentioned in the press release?
Well, you had to dig.
Right.
And most journalists, of course, didn't. So the actual raw statistics, the total for Scotland, the male victims of female perpetrators was over 6,000. Female victims of male perpetrators was about 41,000. So it's still obviously a major, in terms of police statistics, a major gap in the numbers, although we also know from all the research that's done on the crime survey basis that women are 5 to 6 times more likely to report than men. So the probable incidence is actually nowhere like the 41,000 to 6,000. But at the same time, the Scottish Government is still providing no funding of any sort to male victims of domestic abuse.
None whatsoever. Are there any services at all, either government-funded or non-funded services, for men who are escaping violence that you know of in Scotland?
None whatsoever. On the Scottish Government website, it will give you telephone helpline number for an organisation which is based in the south of England and which is open in office hours Monday, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, except lunchtimes. And unfortunately, right at the top of that helpline's website, they'll tell you that one of their principal objectives is to help male perpetrators deal with their violence.
Gee, I'm sure a victim, male victim, would expect a friendly response from such a...
Precisely, and I can... I have no problems whatsoever with organisations being set up to help women who are on the receiving end of violence.
Of course.
But I'm concerned that, in political terms here, the whole argument is conducted on what you'd call a zero-sum basis. That is, that the politicians who support provide the financial support for the women's organisations, and the women's organisations themselves somehow feel that their legitimacy is threatened if they allow themselves to acknowledge the reality that not only that males can be on the receiving end, but sometimes females can be the perpetrators. And interestingly enough, by the way, in the series of statistics, the single category that rose fastest of all over the last number of years is female victims of female perpetrators. In the most recent set of statistics, came out at 561, which is about 1% of the total. The Scottish Government website is still running on its domestic abuse pages. They have a thing called Key facts on domestic abuse, which starts off saying 91% of domestic abuse is suffered by women and 91% is perpetrated by men. Now, these are figures from 2002, and they're still running them. In every single year since the figures have been collected, the rate at which male reports of being on the receiving end has risen faster than the rate of female reports being on the receiving end. So that gap is now about 85% of women being on the receiving end, and it's now over 12% of men.
Do you think that the increase in reporting of male victims is indicating that men are finally becoming less reluctant to report being a victim of their female partner and actually to, you know, get up the courage to go into a police station and report it? You know, in the past, all the evidence shows that they haven't been prepared to do so because often the police will laugh at them or,
yeah,
you know, tell them to go home.
I'm sure, well, it's impossible to say because there is no clear research. Although, I actually used to work myself for a number of years in the prosecution service in Scotland. I tried being a civil servant for a few years and therefore was working inside the system and took part in the compulsory domestic abuse training that we all had to do. So I've actually worked with police quite a lot, and to be honest, my experience from talking to police on a kind of personal level is I think they are at the liberal leading edge of this. Some of them would be shocked to hear me say that, but they are very conscious that they are expected to remove, if there is an incident of some sort, they are expected to remove the male, no matter what the allegations may be and whether there are witnesses or not. But a lot of them feel very uncomfortable about it, and I think on a personal basis an increasing number of police officers are beginning to recognise and therefore be more sympathetic to the notion that males can be on the receiving end as well as being on the dishing out end.
That's certainly been my experience of personal contact with police officers here, and but over here, unfortunately, because the training and the policies direct them, you know, as you say, same as in Scotland, to remove the male regardless of context, they often feel that their hands are tied and that they feel very awkward in these requests, but they have no option but to follow them.
So I suspect if the male has a clear injury, he is more likely to be listened to. But I guess in the situation where there has been an incident in which there is screaming, shouting and throwing of things around, and it's not clear who was most severely hurt, then the male will just be removed.
We'll be back with more of John Forsyth after this short break.
Show you.
so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. On the line now from Scotland, I have Mr. John Forsyth, who's an independent journalist who's previously worked for the BBC in London and previously been political editor of the Scotland on Sunday newspaper.
I'd like to get back to the point you made earlier about the zero-sum game or the zero-sum situation, or as perceived by the current providers of services or receivers of government funding. It seems quite clear that they don't want any funding to go to services for men, and that somehow this would be detrimental to their cause. This may be quite rational in the sense that governments often have a finite pot of money, and they feel that, well, if men get services, maybe that money may come out of the female pot, which may or may not happen, but that may be a rational fear. But I'd like to explore another area. You've probably heard of a woman called Erin Pitsey.
Well, I met her many years ago. One of my first jobs in London was working with an organisation called Shelter, the homeless organisation, campaign for the homeless and badly housed. And I used to edit their housing magazine. And I came across Erin Pitsey in the late 1970s and found her to be a very impressive person and inspirational in the fact that she was taking on ridicule, inertia, reluctance, all of those things in order to deal with a manifest problem that she was coming across on a kind of day-to-day basis.
We've had her on the on this program last year, I believe, and you know, I agree. She's almost become a bit of a martyr or a saint for the cause. The amount of vitriol and even death threats that and professional ridicule that she's weathered, I guess, in order to try and bring some balance to this issue. Anyway, when we spoke to her, she told us about her experiences at the first women's shelter that she set up
in Chiswick, yeah,
in the UK back in the 70s. And what she said was that she found that a great number of the women who were coming to her, over 60%, were just as violent and abusive as the partners they were leaving. Now, my question to you is, if this is still the case, and if the women who are coming to the current services, if a lot of them are violent or either to some level or even as violent as their male partners, perhaps the services fear that if services are funded for male victims, that this sort of dirty secret may come out and may complicate. I mean, violence is a complicated issue, but their fear may be that if this issue becomes truly as complex as it really is, rather than their nice little neat package of it's all about gender, yeah, that the emperor may suddenly be seen to be without clothes. What do you think of that hypothesis?
Yes. Can I say a couple of things about that? I think, firstly, there clearly is a political issue, and I can almost see, at a level of political analysis, what kind of happened, which was that a particular strand, I hate to use the word feminism, because, I mean, for goodness sake, I always thought I was a feminist.
Me too.
In those days. And I mean, way back in the 70s, I was out marching in the very first Reclaim the Night marches in London, about 78 or something like that. And I always thought that, if you like, both my political instincts personally and my journalism were about exposing abuses of power and manipulation and that sort of thing, wherever I found it. And there clearly were issues for where women were being excluded in a systematic basis from doing what they wished to do to fulfill their potential in the workplace or in public life and wherever. So I have no problems with that. But what happened, as far as I can see, is that a particular faction seemed to take control of the whole, I mean, just claimed control of the whole organisation round about in the 80s and 90s, when in this country Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister, Labour were in total disarray, and they kind of moved into the organisation. And so they changed over a very short period of time. When Labour came back into power, they changed from being single-issue campaigning organisations doing exactly what campaigning organisations should do. Suddenly they were invited inside the tent, and they were in total control of the agenda. They were in total control of the gathering and dissemination of information. And so they are now in a position where they can abuse state power in pursuit of this rather slender factional analysis of what feminism should be. And they've stolen the word feminism. It's awful. But can I also say it doesn't have to be like that? And I've talked, I don't know whether you've ever come across the folk in Wales who, over the last couple of years, through the devolved Welsh Assembly, have begun to roll back the tide, and they have begun to fund a helpline for male victims of domestic abuse. They've come up with funding for the first specific refuges for men and their kids. That's another very important issue up here. But the chap who runs the project, it's called the DIN Project, he was saying that in the first, I haven't talked to him for a couple of months, but in the first few months that they were running their helpline, which was for male victims of domestic violence, that they had no calls from men, but the people who were calling were men's sisters, men's mothers, who were phoning up and saying, look, these things are happening to my son, my brother, or my next-door neighbour, but he won't do anything about it. And so the process is beginning in Wales. And the chap, Adam Rees, down there, says that he's getting a good response from the police and from the social services organisations. But he is also aware that a substantial proportion of the women's aid groups think that he is shouldn't exist, that they're appalled at his very the very idea that he should exist. But an increasing number of them are actually becoming sympathetic to him, because they're saying, if you're doing this, you get the heat off us, because we can steer people to you who just cause us problems, because we don't either have facilities for them or we don't really want to know about it. And so it doesn't have to be like it is at the moment in Scotland.
I know your near neighbours in the Republic of Ireland, there's a fantastic organisation there run by Mary Cleary called Amen that does fantastic work, and I believe does receive some government funding, and once again is a bit of a shining light in this area. So as you say, I agree absolutely, it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, I've been to conferences where I've met female workers at women's shelters. These are men's health conferences, and they're coming along because they say, look, we've been running these programs for decades and they're not working. We really need to start talking to men and looking at a broader picture than this narrow gender definition of violence in order to actually start reducing the incidence of violence, because this gender paradigm we've been operating on for years doesn't seem to be working. So I think there is a broadening out or a shift happening, but it's very quiet and it doesn't seem to make it through to the public through the media, and that's what often annoys me.
Yeah, well, I think it's the reality is probably complicated. And people prefer simplicity. I did speak to a senior police officer in, well, better not say which force in case I get him into trouble.
Sure.
Just a few weeks ago, and he is in charge of their domestic abuse unit and in charge of a substantial number of officers. And his view was that there are he was picking figures out of the air, but he was saying maybe, I don't know, 15% of the cases that they come across are clearly cases of serious male violence against women, and another 15 at the other side are serious cases of female violence against men. But he says in the middle, there are just a lot of, he said the ideological explanation of the gender-based analysis is that violence is about male power, both in the house and in society.
Mm.
He thinks that in the majority of cases, it's not about male power, but it's not about power at all. It's just that violence is an, I hesitate to say, a form of communication, but it's an early response to any disagreement or conflict or whatever in the household. It is not about power, it's just that they don't really have any other means of resolving an argument. And so both parties are just as liable as each other to blow a fuse, to throw something, to swing a punch or whatever. But he's quite impatient with the notion that it's about, that everything is, it was an achievement to get the acceptance of the idea that in some cases it is about abuse of power, but now that's the only idea they're allowed to have, and he said it doesn't fit most of the cases that they deal with.
We'll be back with more of John Forsyth from Scotland after this track.
From wall to wall, lost in the horror of Golden Street Hall. Golden Street Hall, where love has to crawl. Down comes the gavel, the winner takes all. Golden Street Hall, my heart is appalled at the casual carnage behind every door. Pillars of marble, institutionalized horror all day, haunting sad hearts that can't run away. All for nothing and nothing for all. Life slipped through fingers in Golden Street Hall. A modern torture chamber disguised as a court, processing daily and an endless onslaught of
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line we have, from Scotland, independent journalist John Forsyth.
Do you know whether in Scotland there is much association between domestic violence and abuse and, I guess, poverty and disadvantage on the one hand, and the abuse of alcohol and other drugs on the other?
Well, the Scottish Government and the department within the Scottish Government that deals with, I mean, it's called the Violence Against Women Group, that runs their domestic abuse services. So it kind of gives the game away somewhat. And they are adamant that there is no connection between alcohol or drug abuse and violence, because it's about male power. And they won't have it to be said that whether it's a reason or even a mitigation or even a kind of an association, they won't let it be said that drink or drugs have anything to do with it. But my own experience is that for a lot of people with chaotic lives, where drink or drugs are daily necessities, then their judgment is likely to be affected in all sorts of areas of interaction.
It's been very interesting talking to you, John, and getting a picture of the situation over in Scotland. It certainly seems to be run very parallel to what's happening over here in Australia. Are there any lights at the end of the tunnel? Have you seen any sort of chinks in the armour in Scotland itself? I know you talked about the Welsh organisation.
Well, I wonder. Certainly, a note that one Conservative member of the Scottish Parliament, in particular a woman called Mary Scanlon, has been picking up this issue and saying, I mean, she just takes a very simplistic view that if you're on the receiving end of domestic abuse or domestic violence, it doesn't matter what gender you are, you're entitled to the same support and services regardless of sex. And interestingly enough, she says that of all the issues that she's been involved with in the Scottish Parliament over the years, this is the one where members of other parties keep coming up to her and saying, well done, this is a really important story, an important issue. And so she's getting a lot of feedback. And I think that if the momentum can be continued, I think that it's so obvious that the Scottish government, the 100% or nothing position, is untenable. If the momentum can be continued, then I think they will have to give way at some point. But they will be working feverishly inside the organisation, inside the Scottish government, to make sure that that day never comes. So I think they're used to seeing issues being raised, and they can ride the storm for a month or two until they go away again. I can give you, I don't know whether we have time, but I can give you one terribly interesting example of this.
Oh, please do.
The reason that the Scottish Government spokespeople will give for not providing any services is that they say that they commissioned some research, and amongst male victims of domestic violence, and the research findings were that there was no need for any services. And that's the line that's trotted out whenever any journalists ask them about it. And it kind of relies on the journalists just saying, oh, well, that'll be right then, and not actually bothering to go and look at the research. But I did go and look at the research, and it doesn't say anything like that at all. This particular piece of research sticks out like a sore thumb. The first reason that it sticks out is that the research was commissioned to make contact with men who had reported in a previous crime survey and basically check their story. So the first thing that sticks out like a sore thumb is, can you imagine the outrage that there would have been if it was suggested that research should be commissioned to check the stories of women that had reported domestic abuse or domestic violence?
Mm.
But they did it anyway, and the research was conducted in 2002. They managed to contact 46 men who had reported to the crime survey in 2000. So already this information is very old, and each year since then the number of males on the receiving end of domestic abuse has increased. And apparently some of those men said A, they couldn't remember, or B, they weren't sure whether they had been abused, and so they were kind of just filleted out of the research. And I did try and contact the person who had conducted the research, and I left phone messages, emailed him over and over again, and did eventually manage, probably by misadventure, to get him on the end of a phone just a couple of weeks ago, and I said who I was. And he said, oh yes, you're phoning about that domestic abuse research. And I said, yeah, have you been getting my messages? He said, yeah, I don't want to talk about it. So I said, well, I've been a journalist for 30 years, and I can say you're the first academic I've ever met who doesn't want to talk about his research. And he said, no, I'm just not comfortable. And the only thing that I got out of him was that he wasn't comfortable about the polarized use to which his research had been put. So A, it sticks out like a sore thumb. B, it's 7 years old. C, it's been overtaken by events. And D, I don't think he particularly stands by his findings.
Mm, and yet this is the sole piece of evidence that's trotted out to stop funding for male victims.
But it's quite cynical, I think. I suppose being a journalist, I always blame the journalists because it's their job to ask these questions and check the research, not just to take it at face value, because governments do what governments do.
I know journalists are busy people and they can't be expected to spend hours checking every statistic in a press release, but we just had the most outrageous example of that happening here in Australia. We have this White Ribbon Day campaign every year where...
We have it too.
Yeah, so it's all through the media and it's all one-sided, as always. And this year the White Ribbon Foundation published a report and they made a big error, and they quoted that about one-third of boys, males under the age of 18, thought that it was okay to hit a girl. And this was the headline all over the country. All the major papers covered it. When I actually went to the source data actually showed that they actually thought that it was okay for girls to hit boys, not the other way around. And yet not one journalist, you know, made any investigations. And of course, you can't take this stuff back. It's out there in the public consciousness now.
I have a very similar example, not to do with domestic violence, but I remember driving up from the Scottish borders up to Edinburgh a couple of years back and heard a story on the news about our child support agency. I think you've got one too.
Yes, we sure do.
And the story that was on the radio, and it was on every single newspaper the next day, and it was first item in all the television news bulletins, was that 70% of absent fathers weren't paying what they were supposed to pay. And I was just driving, and I thought, that's just not right. That can't be right. So when I got in, I started to pursue it, and I didn't get very far, so I actually had to put down freedom of information questions. And when the answers came back, it turned out that whichever committee at Westminster this was had been looking at this, they had read the figures the wrong way around. That it wasn't 70% of absent fathers weren't paying, it was that 70% were paying. And so I said to the department, the press office, what efforts did you make to correct this? Because this is completely wrong. And they said, oh, well, if any journalists phoned up, we told them the right figures. And I said, well, how many phoned up? And they said, well, you're the only one. And so I then also, by the way, from just because I get very cross at this absent fathers business, which is politically loaded as well. So I said, well, now that we've got this far, I want you to give me the percentage of non-resident parents who are men who aren't paying, and also the percentage of non-resident parents who are women who are not paying. And the answer that I got was that 30% of non-resident parents who are men weren't paying. Often that can be because you're in dispute, not because you're refusing to pay. And 31% of non-resident parents who were women weren't paying. So it's clear that these things are not about gender. better about situations.
That's been our line here on Dad's on the Air for many years now, and we'll keep chipping away. John, I hope that you keep chipping away over there in Scotland, and let's hope that we see some changes. And I really believe that if changes occur in one sort of Western democracy, if things change over here, there may be, or over in your side of the pond, that there's a big chance that they may roll around the world, because I think that all of the Western democracies are ripe for change, and it's just a matter of reaching that tipping point for change to come.
Let's be optimistic about it.
I always try and be optimistic. Otherwise, sometimes it's hard to keep going if you don't think that things may change. So, John, thank you so much for coming on Dad's on the Air.
It's a privilege. Thank you.
It would be great if any other issues around men and fathers come up that you're working on or have interest in, please do get in touch. It's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks. That was John Forsyth. He is an independent journalist based in Scotland.
Just the other day, he came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's so. He walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, the little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. College just the other day, so much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you, can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time then.
Dan's in distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
You're listening to Dads on the Air. My name is Peter Van Voord, and today we're going to link up with a father's group in the Czech Republic. The group goes under the title of K213, and their spokesman is the founder and director of the group, Jiri Fiala. The group's title comes from the number of the paragraph of the Czech's crime code, paragraph 213, which states that non-payment of child custody is a crime. The K stands for club, so we've got club 213. The more you discover, the gloomier it becomes. The more you learn, the clearer the realization that the international family law industry has crushed the family bonds of millions of families around the world. But that's not a crime. However, we're bridging the gaps. The internet is the new information highway, and the human tragedies inflicted upon us by our relevant states are beamed around the world within minutes. So no longer can they hide from the inevitable. Bridging this gap today, we're joined by Jiri Fiala from the Czech Republic. Welcome to Dads on the Air, Jiri. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I can hear you, yes.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Jiri, K213, an interesting name. How did it all start for you?
How did we start?
Yes, how did it begin?
Yes. Well, we have started 4 years ago when we have founded the organization K213. And this organization has only one aim or one target, and this is to take away paragraph 213 from the Czech penalty law. This is the only target of this movement, and nowadays it more or less gets together all the fathers which are prosecuted by this paragraph. It means fathers who, for example, don't have enough money to pay the children's allowances or children's money, and according to this law, it is a crime in the Czech Republic. They can be sentenced to a prison. And of course, if it happens, if they are sentenced to a prison and they are imprisoned, then they have almost no possibilities to get a new job. So it means when they are released from the prison and they return to their real life, they don't have anything, which means that if you are once sentenced, you will be sentenced continuously going on, because you have no chance to get away from this court circle.
Yes, it's pretty much the same in a lot of countries where they send you to jail. Luckily, in Australia, we don't have that yet. And I say yet because many other countries have that. When people can't pay their child support, they put him in jail. It's a terrible situation. Was it like that before the communist regime broke down?
Yes, definitely. It's a heritage of the communist regime, because this paragraph was created during the communist time. And I think it was, let's say, adapted on that period, or on that especially economy, because communist economy had a compulsory working, so everyone had to work or had to have some employment. Not to have unemployment was a crime, too. So therefore, if everyone had unemployment, everyone had also some income or some wage.
Yes.
And it was possible to pay these children's allowances from this, let's say, secured income. But when the economy completely changed and we had a market economy since 1990, it also brings with it unemployment and problems to get a job. In some areas, quite difficult problems. But the law didn't react on these changes. So it means it simply conserved these old paragraphs. And it's still being a crime not to pay the children's allowances, even if you don't have from to pay them. So it means no matter if you are employed or unemployed, if you have an income or you don't have it, the state is not interested in this. And if you don't pay according to the verdict of the court, you can be sentenced to prison. Maybe I should say one more thing. Czech Republic is, I would say, quite an exception in Europe, because I have studied criminal law of other countries like France, like England. They don't have such paragraphs. Mostly it's solved as a Civilian matter, so it means if father doesn't have money to pay the children allowances, it will be solved by a civilian court, but not a penalty court. Czech Republic is an exception in this.
So your political system changed, but your family law system didn't change. Is that right?
That's right. It didn't change. So it means each father is responsible for paying his money according to the verdict which was issued, and no one is interested in circumstances, so it means whether he has money or not, he has to pay, and nothing has been changed since the last 20 years. So it's the target of our movement to change the situation, because we think that this paragraph doesn't belong to the market economy.
And so you have... In the family court, you have sole parent custody. Do you have shared parenting agreements at all?
We have shared custody and we have a sole custody. We have both possibilities, but the sole custody is, I would say, 98% of the cases. In spite of the fact that the shared custody is in the law already 10 years. But the law, but the courts do not mostly react on the changes in the law, and they conservate the old situation when they, in almost 100%, they give children to the mother.
And your population is around 10.5 million, isn't it? What's the percentage of divorce in your country? Is it about 40-50%, right?
I am not sure if I got it correct, but the percentage of the divorce in this country is almost 60% from the marriages. So it means every second marriage is being divorced.
Yes. And how many children in the Czech Republic are now living in one-parent family?
How many children?
Yes.
We have some figures which are saying that 30,000 children each year do suffer by a new divorce. So it means in the, let's say, newly appeared divorces in this year, there are 30,000 children.
How many children end up living with their mothers? What's the percentage? How many children live with mothers?
With the mother, usually ends, according to the last statistics, 96%. So it means only 4% is given to someone else. It could be a grandmother, it could be a grandfather, it could be even a, let's say, strange person, which is not a relative person to that child. And also it can be a father. But father, I think it's some 2%.
So 96%, you say? Wow.
That... Yes, 96% is given to the mother. This is hardly believable, but it is so. I would say it's also an exception in the European Union nowadays. I have seen some effort even from the justice itself to change this, I would say, set status. But still nowadays it's 96% going to the marriage.
Jerry, probably the main issue affecting most fathers around the world is the issue of the custodial parent refusing to allow the children contact with the other parent. Has that happened much in Czech?
Yes, it's certainly a big problem, because if, let's say, mother doesn't want to overgive children to his father, even if he has a valid verdict from the court, he can't do almost anything. In the court, they will tell you that it's up to you. You should agree with your ex-wife, or you should agree with the mother of the children. And mostly they do not help you. Certainly it's not according to the law, because the law is saying that they should take measures to secure your contact with the other parent. So if, let's say, mother doesn't want to overgive children, the court should give her fines. If the fines do not help, then she could be innocent. But in reality, it never happens. So it means it's more or less upon the agreement between father and mother, if he can see the children. And if the mother doesn't want him to see it, he simply can't see them. This is, for example, my case, and this was one of the reasons that I have also won in the European Court for Human Rights in Strasbourg, because they have seen that I applied several times the court, the respective court, to secure my contact with children, and they have never done it. They simply did not do anything.
Yes, it's they're pretty weak, actually. There's not much recourse for fathers, I'm afraid. Jerry, are there many other fatherhood groups in the Czech Republic?
Father groups, yes. Those who do exist are not very active. There are some others, certainly, like Children for Justice and so on, but they are not very many seen, very much seen, let's say, on the public scene. They mostly limit themselves on writing letters and protests to the officials or to the government and so on. But the government doesn't care about letters. They if they have to care about anything, then they must be pressed or pressed to it. And definitely, such a pressure could be caused only by concrete action.
Do the groups work very much together?
If we are together with them. Yeah, we have some contacts to them, certainly. We coordinate some actions, and on some actions we prepare together. But I would say usually the K213 is usually the first initiator of an action which is taken on the public.
And you're the biggest group, and you have about 600 members, did you say?
Well, how big they are. Well, to K213 has some 600 members, or almost 600 members. The other ones are definitely smaller, so I would say there are several dozens of members.
We're speaking with Jerry Fiala from the Czech Republic. We'll go to a short break and return to learn more about conditions for fathers and their children in his country.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
You're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney, Australia, and worldwide on the web at www.dadsontheair.net. My name is Peter Vandervoort, and I'm speaking with Jerry Fiala from the Czech Republic in Eastern Europe. Jerry, in your opinion, what are the top priorities for fathers in the Czech Republic?
Regarding the changes which we would like to see, we definitely think that there are some on the way, because such a status is unacceptable for the European Union. It's something else what is in the rest of the European Union, especially, let's say, France or Nordic countries like Sweden, Finland and Norway, because they have definitely other regime as for the post-divorce procurement of the children. So therefore we believe that this status is not possible to maintain for a longer time. But still nothing will come by itself. We have to fight for it. We have to help to come to these changes, and we simply can't sit with hands on the arm and waiting that it will come by itself. It will never come by itself.
Have you had any successes during the last 3 years or so? Have you had many successes?
Well, we would like especially to see the fulfillment of our most important target, so it means to take away this paragraph 213. And we see that there is still a very great resistance against this. So I would like, we have to focus on this, especially in the view that nowadays is being accepted a new penalty law, which is again conserving this old communist paragraph, which is saying that the non-payment of children's allowances is a crime. So we definitely would, concentrate our effort to remove this old paragraph from this, and we will organize also some actions on the public in order public could see that we are here, that we follow this, acceptance of this new penalty law, and we would not permit, or we would not like to see that it again conserves this old, community. Well, we are 600 people, and the Czech Republic is some 10 million inhabitants. So, it's a smaller group, but nevertheless active and definitely important. Part of the voice.
What about the issue of false abuse allegations? Does that happen much?
Yes, it does. I would say, according to this paragraph, that there are sentenced some 11,000 people each year. So it means this is also very interesting. Czech Republic has the highest number of prisoners in Europe. And this is only thanks to this paragraph, because it's not the way that, Czech people are, criminals more than the other Europeans. But simply some things which are not a crime in other European countries, in Czech Republic they are. And non-payment of children allowances is one of them, and I would say even the most important. So it means, according to this paragraph, there are annually sentenced 11,000 people, which is an incredible number.
The issue of suicide, do you have figures? Do you have any official figures of how many fathers commit suicide?
As I said, it's a very, very frequent crime, because a lot of people certainly come to a situation that they lose the job, or at least for some period they lose the job, and they don't have from where to pay it. And if, for example, my mother of the child announced it to the police, they could be certainly sentenced. So I would say it's very common, and it's very frequent to see this. We try to support them as we can. So it means we take part, for example, in this court, and we try to show to the public that they are not alone, that we are with them, and that we know about these cases. We publish these cases also on our website. So the public, I would say, more and more is following our website, because they are quite interesting, and things which are not known, or which are not published generally, these things could be read on our website, and I would say they got more and more interesting.
Is there any government financial support for men and fathers in the Czech Republic?
I haven't seen that. I think our government doesn't have any money reserved for fathers. They have the general opinion that fathers, this is a terrible group which only wants to create problems. This is certainly not true. I would give you a very typical example. For example, Social Democracy, which nowadays has won the last election, so it looks that they will, let's say, govern next 4 or 5 years in this country. They have a woman which is a minister for women and family, but they don't have a man which would be a minister for fathers and family. And when I ask them, how is it possible? How do they imagine, let's say, the equality between two sexes? The only answer is that I am the terrible maker and I hope to create a problem to them in order they can't win the election. So I would say this is a very typical to present the general opinion of very many official people and, of course, of the government. For them, the only discriminated minority is women. Even I do not know from where they have taken it, because I would say if there is anyone discriminated in this country, then there are definitely men and especially fathers after the divorce. And it is not only our impression or opinion. We can prove it by international verdict from international court, which is saying that this is not possible, that really we are a discriminated group, and the government has to pay fines for such behavior. But still, it looks that it's cheaper for the government to pay fines than to improve the situation.
Does the government give money support to women's groups?
Yes, certainly. Certainly, the government gives quite a lot of money on women groups. I would say if you are a woman and you will start to say that you are discriminated, there are immediately at least 5 or 6 organizations, women organizations among you. All of them are paid from the government money. Immediately they start to take very, very strict actions, and definitely they dedicate you all the governmental support and all the state support. So I would say the women's movement is definitely much stronger and much better paid. I wouldn't say better paid because we are not paid at all, but definitely better paid from the government. And they got quite a lot of money, not only from the government, but from different ministries and also from abroad, from the European Union.
Jerry, do you have many women speaking out in support of fathers?
Are you asking on the women in the chapters? So it means how many, let's say, judges women do we have?
Oh, no, women. Correct. And many women speaking out to support fathers, to help fathers?
In the justice, let's say, from the judges, there are more than 80% of women. So it means they definitely take all the actions to protect mothers. And if you have a divorce in front of a woman judge, I would say it's very very clear even beforehand, because she simply understands it in the way how mother understands it, and she always protects the mother and the woman, and you have no chance for any protection. So you are the evil, the embodiment of the evil at the court, and no matter if you have done anything or you haven't done anything, no interest in any evidence, no interest in any approvals, no interest how to prove if you were the wrong one or if you were the better one, simply you are always the worst one.
Do many women support you?
Well, there are some women supporting our organization totally, and especially there are women who let's say got the personal experience with this mostly through her husband. So it means, for example, they got married for the second time, or at least her husband has the second marriage, and he has some children from the first marriage. And then the new wife, of course, gets to know these problems through through her husband.
Yes.
She can see, for example, the problem to get the children from the former wife just for a weekend. She can see how the terrible economical situation is caused by the court when her husband has to pay, let's say, marvelous sums of money for his previous children. No matter if he would have enough money for his nowadays family, and no matter if he has new children with his new wife.
So, Jerry, what do you think?
I would say if there are women supporting our organization, they are mostly wives of these husbands who suffer from this paragraph.
Yes, yes. So what do you think is the solution, Jerry? How do we solve the problem?
How would I solve the problem? Well, definitely there must be the equality of the sexes in the family life, and especially in front of the divorce court. So it means you must have the same right to educate your children as the wife has. And one of the solutions is definitely to take away these 80% of women from the justice, because they are not objective. I would say generally women have limited possibilities or limited adoration for, let's say, higher feelings. And feeling for justice is a higher feeling. So I would say that Their verdict, their way of understanding it, has nothing to do with real justice or with a good verdict. For example, for them, a good verdict is that mother has all the money from his previous, from her previous husband, and that's all that they are interested in. Well, this is not a justice. This can't be preserved, and this must be changed.
How many children do not see their fathers anymore?
How many children can't see their fathers?
Yes.
Well, I have seen some statistics, and the statistics was saying that almost 90% of divorced wives have a tendency to create problems to overgive children to her previous husband. 90%. So if we imagine that we have maybe some 40,000 divorces annually, we can quite easily count how many children it would be, but I would say it's at least 25,000 children each year.
We'll not see that.
Each year, new 25,000 children is added.
That's terrible, isn't it? Terrible. Finally, Jerry, we're almost out of time. If you had one wish for change, what would it be? One wish.
Only one wish. Well, definitely it would be that the Czech justice and the Czech state is generally would respect the European opinion. So it means would respect, first of all, European verdicts and sentences. So it means if the European Court for Human Rights will say, you have done it wrong, you have to revise it, you have to repair your verdict, that the justice will do that. And they do not want to do that. They simply do not respect the international verdicts. They do not respect their international relations and obligations, and this is the problem of this country. Because then simply you can't get to your right, even with a valid verdict from the international court, that you are damaged, that this state has broken your rights, and it should improve it.
So you want equal rights?
So this is my wish.
You want equal rights? Yes. Equal rights for men
equal
and
right,
women?
Certainly equal rights, because there is no reason to discriminate one of the parents. According to the researches, there is not true that mothers have, let's say, stronger relation to the child than fathers. It's not true at all. I know personally very many cases where it is on the contrary, that the father has definitely stronger relation to his children than the mother. So at least the equality must be very strictly respected, otherwise we can't speak about justice or equal rights.
Jerry Fiala, you have been a fascinating guest. We've had some problems with the lines, but hopefully it will work out okay. We thank you so much for sharing with us the conditions faced by separated fathers and their children in the Czech Republic. You're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you live from Sydney, Australia, and we'll be back after the break.
Yeah, we're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
Well, as you can hear, a lot of, still a lot of work to be done, a lot of unhappy fathers out there still, and not only in Australia but all around the world. Phil, we're heading for Christmas, which is for many men is a particularly difficult time, especially when they refuse contact with their own children. Is there any special message you may want to give to those dads?
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Yeah, rightly said, mate. It is a very difficult time for dads when they don't see their kids. You know, we've got lots of guys in our groups at the moment around Sydney that are going through this particular feelings and emotions right at this point in time.
I guess, man agony.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Man agony. I guess, you know, my message is you know, don't give up. You know, I guess one good thing about this time of year is it is the end of the year. You know, it's almost 2009, and I think we look forward to 2009 and try and change our circumstances and, you know, get into the mediation centres, get into the court systems and get our kids back for Christmas 2009.
Yeah, I think we are winning. I think, you know, things are changing. I mean, the change is slow. But people are, I mean, but of course we're up against these campaigns where they tell obvious blatant lies about men's male violence and stuff and all this crap that we're still wading through. You know, these are huge problems that we've basically got to stop this misinformation. It's amazing that media can be abused in such a way to basically just tell lies and to completely cook the facts to make men look like a bunch of violent bastards, which everybody knows we are not.
Yeah, and you know the toughest thing is, and what I hear most about the guys is the waiting. You know, you have to wait 6 weeks for this. You have to wait 2 months for that. You have to wait, you know, 6 months for this court case to come around. That is the toughest part. You know, it's the waiting. Once you've got something regular and concrete, well, then you know you can start to rebuild your life and away you go. But until you get that, it's like, you know, swimming in an open seas, mate.
Yeah. The thing that helped me the most at the time when I was feeling it the worst, when you just couldn't get to your contact with your children, was the fact that nothing lasts forever, and it's only a matter of waiting, and all good will come to you. Well, that's it from us this week. We hope you enjoyed the program. We especially like to thank our guests this week, Jerry Fiala from the Czech Republic and John Forsyth from Scotland. Don't forget you can listen to the program when it's uploaded to our website at www.dadsontheair.net later today. We look forward to your company next week when we'll have another interesting program for you. So from the Dads on the Air team, thank you for listening and see you next week.
We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.